When it comes to series, this is one of the easier ones to talk about and one of the harder ones to apply. Because the idea of it is something that, like, I don't need to convince you of, because every single one of you, if I were to ask you, do you want to be blessed? Every single one of you is going to say, like, yeah, I want to be blessed. Like, you'd have to be a little bit psychotic to be like, no, I'm good. You know, I'm all the way blessed up. You know, I'm full. Don't need anything else. If you were to say that, I would think that you're a little bit off. Oftentimes when we think about what does it mean to be blessed, a lot of times we just kind of, our mind goes towards more money. This is kind of what our mind goes towards. And something I've noticed in my own life is that I don't ask God for more money anymore, rarely. Occasionally I have, but what I do is instead I share my heart about something that I want, maybe something that I need, that money can buy. And I've found that open-ended prayers for just more money usually leads to greed. Like, it's usually not leading to a positive place. And, you know, just that kind of prayer. It's, God, I just want more money. And we don't have any definition as to, like, what we would use that money for or what we would do with it. But it's just this open-ended thing. Usually it shows that our heart isn't really in the right place. And God's probably not going to give us that money because we don't even have a plan of what and how we would use it. There's a question that I want all of us, as we leave today, I want us to be thinking about. Hopefully we have an answer to, and that question is, am I generous? Like, that's a question that you and I need to really have an understanding of. Am I generous? And as you think about it, you get to this place, maybe, you know, some of you are like, I already know the answer. Yes, I am. Some of you are like, maybe I don't know. I don't really want to ask the question. I don't want to ask God the question because I don't want to hear the answer. And when you think about it, you know, what about other people? If I were to, you know, sometimes we have an answer about ourselves, but what if I were to poll your family members? What if I were to poll your closest friends and say, hey, you know, is Anthony generous? Is Amy generous? You know, and what would they say? And does it matter? Does it matter what they say? Because if you have an idea about it, does it matter how other people perceive you? Is it important for you to be known as a generous person? Is that something that matters to you? There's a great Bible story that illustrates and brings out a lot of these different themes, kind of shows the different confliction, the tension between a generous heart and the opposite. And it's found in John chapter 12. It says this, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor, and Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. He said, why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. So there's a few things that initially stand out to me in regards to this scripture. First, nard is an interesting word. It does not sound expensive to me. It does not sound luxurious. To me, it seems like something you'd pick up at the hardware store. Or maybe like a middle school insult, like stop being such a nard. You know, I don't know. It just is a strange word. Also with this, it's kind of interesting that the writer is kind of pulling out some different main characters. All right, typically we would think like, well, Jesus is a big character. Lazarus, something dramatic just happened with him a few verses, a few chapters prior. And really, they're not the main characters that the writer's kind of pulling out in this. Instead, he's kind of zeroing in on Mary and then also on Judas. And there's some of those names that because of what someone did, those names have just kind of been ruined for all time. Like, you don't hear many kids named like Adolf, Jezebel, Judas. You know, like they did some, like when I read those, you know, articles about the most common baby names, I never see those ones on the list. Those aren't at the top. But there is something that I find really interesting, which stood out to me just recently when I was reading this, and I haven't even like dived in or like unpacked what this means. But the people closest in proximity to Jesus also experienced the blessing. Like it wasn't intended for them, but it says the house was filled with the fragrance. And there was other people present in the house. And even though they weren't really a part of this interaction that was going on between Jesus and Mary, they still experienced the blessing because they were within that proximity. And so Judas, he kind of gets exposed for who he is. He actually took from the offering. He stole from it. And two questions. I love questions. Sometimes I like questions more than answers because it kind of really makes you think and you dig into it. But two questions. Why would Mary give such an extravagant gift? Like, why would she do it? What motivated her to willingly do this without being asked? Nobody compelled her to do it. Nobody made her do it. Nobody said, do this and you'll get to heaven. So why did Mary give such an extravagant gift? And number two, why did it make Judas so upset? Like, why did he get so mad about it? What was it about this gift that bothered him? It wasn't his gift. It wasn't his money. And yet it caused something. It stirred something in him. And really what it revealed is that there's two different hearts. There's the heart of generosity, okay? And so Mary has this extravagant thing that she does, this extravagant gift. And what revealed that heart in her? It was giving. And then we see the opposite, this heart of selfishness in Judas, where he's frustrated and mad and upset. And what revealed his heart? Giving. But ironically, it was somebody else giving that set him off. So the question, am I generous? And when I think about it myself, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. Like, I don't know that it's a level that you reach. You know, I don't think it's like you get to the point and it's like, I am now generous for all of time. And like, I get to embroider something, you know, on my shirt and wear it around. Like, I don't think it's that we reach. Like, it is this back and forth. And selfishness can be really subtle. Like, it can be this thing that kind of creeps its way in. And we do a really good job of disguising it because we use different words to try to sometimes make ourselves feel better. And so we'll say things like, well, I'm just really frugal. And maybe you are. Like, maybe you are honestly frugal. Could be that you're cheap. There's a difference between the two, okay? There is a difference between being frugal and being cheap. You know, or sometimes people are like, well, I'm really wise. I'm really wise when it comes to money and, you know, Maybe you have wisdom and you're making good decisions, but don't let wisdom, you know, be a cover-up for what is actually greed, where you just want more and you want more for yourself. Or I'm really smart, okay? Smart could also mean deceitful if you're not doing, you know, it with the right motive. And it exposes stuff in us, doesn't it? Okay, like it exposes stuff. It shows us, you know, like, oh, okay, I'm actually quite insecure. You know, that there's, you know, money makes me feel secure, and I realize that my security isn't actually in God, but it's in my bank account. And when we read the Bible, or we know what to do and we don't do it, you know what that's called? It's called disobedience. Okay, reveals in us a rebellious heart where it's like, yeah, I know what to do. I'm just not doing it. And God's like, yep, that's you know, rebellion. That's what it is. Do you talk about generous acts of the past to cover up for selfishness in the present? That's another one. How many of you know that you were not the same person 10 years ago that you are now? Hopefully for the better, but maybe not. Maybe you're like, I'm just getting reintroduced to this whole church thing. Like, I know I fell away for a good decade, and I'm back here because I know I was off track. You know, and some of you, it's the opposite. It's like, no, I've planted myself. I've grounded myself in church, in the body of Christ. I've been in his word. I've been praying, and God's been doing this thing in me. He's been building my character, and he's been teaching me these, you know, what it means to be a Christian, to be a follower of Christ. I always laugh when you have, there's something about men, okay? They're in their 30s to 60s, and we love to talk about our high school accomplishments, you know? And if you think about it, it's kind of funny. It's also kind of sad where it's like you got this 50-year-old person. Well, back in high school, I was this all-state running back. And, you know, they're just going on and on. It's like, have you not accomplished anything else in the last 30 years that you're still holding on to, like, this high school accomplishment? Like, what have you been doing with your life since then? And we all have those stories that we like to tell. I love swapping stories from the past. You know, it's a way to learn about people, and we all have those experiences we like to tell again and again, but don't let your past actions be a crutch for your present or your future. Isaiah 43 says, forget the former things, Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? Like, I wonder how often God's asking us that question. You know, like, we're busy and doing our thing, and God's like, don't you see it? Like, do you not perceive it? Like, I'm trying to do this new thing. Like, I'm trying to get you to come and be a part of it, and you're so stuck in the past. You're so stuck with these past things. Do you not perceive it? The enemy of generosity is pretty simple. It's selfishness. You know, God is generous. Satan is selfish. You and I were born selfish. And if any of you have kids, if any of you are grandparents, you know this. Like, it's so obvious in the life of a child that we are born into this sinful world and that we're born selfish. And so my youngest, Nova, she's 2.5. She's a chronic klepto. She just runs around all day stealing stuff. Like, it's her favorite thing to do. It drives us crazy. 90% of her vocabulary is no, mine, and food. I mean, like, that's basically just what she's saying all day. And there's been so many moments where I'm sitting on the couch, and here comes Nova. She's just booking. She's just running, you know, doing the little toddler run. Something about little kids, when they steal, they get supernatural speed. And so she's just running. And then my 5-year-old daughter, Phoenix, is chasing her, you know, and Phoenix is crying, you know, like, you know, Nova took my whatever. And they're going around and around, and everyone's crying. And it gets to the point where, as a parent, you no longer care about justice. You just want peace and quiet. And so it's like, Phoenix, just let her have whatever she has. But Dad, it's actually mine. I'm like, I don't care. She's taking a bunch of my stuff too. Just wait, okay? We'll put her to sleep, and then we'll go raid her room, and we can all take back all the stuff that is ours that she's been taking. If you're going to identify with who you actually are, who God created you to be, then you are a generous person. You were created generous. Born sinful, but created generous. And most people, I would say just about everybody, wants to be generous. Like, it's not something that I need to convince you that, like, it's a good thing. Everyone's like, yeah, I want to be generous. However, there are certain things that we believe, that you and I believe, lies that prevent us from actually operating in generosity. So Judas's statement, it's such an interesting statement. Why wasn't this sold and given to the poor? This statement, as far as we know, as far as I can backtrack through history, this statement kind of originated in Judas. And yet, it's present in each of us. We've said things just like this or very close to it as well. We perceive the extravagant spending of other people and we say, can you believe that? Can you believe what they're driving or that house or what they're wearing? Do you know how much those Lululemon pants cost? They could have not bought those, and instead they could have fed a small nation for at least a month. You know, and so we all have these ideas as to what people should spend their money on. I find it kind of laughable, actually. There was a popular presidential candidate. He campaigned in 2016 and 2020, and he didn't end up winning the nomination of his party. I think he came in second or third. But there was something that really interesting in his speech. Okay, in all of his speeches, he was railing against the millionaires. They're the problem, you know, they're greedy, we gotta tax them more, we gotta redistribute their wealth, and something happened. So he started this in kind of 2016. In 2017, his notoriety, you know, grew. And he actually, during this time, he probably had more speaking engagements and sponsorships and all of this because he's more of a popular figure. And so in 2017, he became a millionaire for the first time in his life. Now, isn't it interesting? His language changed. No longer was he talking about the millionaires. Now he had moved on to the billionaires. The billionaires are the problem, and you know they're corrupt, and we got to take their money. And his language changed to adjust for his new status. As long as we can pretend that the problem exists outside of ourselves, we tell ourselves that we have permission to judge other people. And isn't it ironic how we spend so much time judging how other people spend their money and we don't hold ourselves accountable at all for how much we earn? Like, we're so focused on what other people spend and not on what we earn. And we pretend that earning isn't attached to tangibles when it most definitely is. Okay, like, how much you earn is tied to your work ethic, your good ideas, innovative ideas, education, training, the industry you chose to work in, your character. It's most definitely tied to those things. And if you think differently, you're probably a person who doesn't have a lot of those things that I just listed, if I'm honest. 79% of millionaires in the United States, they received zero inheritance. It means they were first-generation millionaires. They didn't get lucky. They worked hard. They were made smart choices, lived on less than they earned. They saved. They invested. But when we're talking about extravagance, you know, kind of a definition, it is the perception of those who have more than you. They are extravagant. You know, you're driving through, you go through one of those neighborhoods, and it's like, oh, what a neighborhood. There's no cracks in the driveway. It's just that smooth cement. And look at that trim work. You know, you see the door. You're like, the door's giant. Like, what an extravagant neighborhood. Until you get the promotion, until you get the raise, you move into that neighborhood, it's no longer extravagant. Now it's somebody else's neighborhood who's further along than you. Now that's the extravagant neighborhood. We always want to point to something else so that we don't have to point to ourselves. There was this pastor, he was driving with a leader from his church, and they were driving down the road, and someone from their church came and passed them going the other way, and he was driving a $150,000 car, and the pastor waved, and then the person in the car said, you know that person? He goes, yeah, I know that person, very generous man, and this person in the car said to the pastor, well, he must not be that generous, otherwise he wouldn't be driving that car. He would sell it and give money to the poor. And this pastor knew that this was one of those uncomfortable teaching moments. And he said, if you cared about the poor, you would sell your car and you would give it to the poor. And by the way, that statement that you just made, there was a person a long time ago who made a very similar statement as well. As long as we can point to others and say that they're not doing what we think they should be doing, then we don't have to look inside at what we know we should be doing. Judas, he had the money bag of all people. Jesus gave the responsibility to Judas. Another question for you, think about this. Do you think that Jesus knew that Judas was a thief when he gave him control over the money bag? Do you think that Jesus knew it? I think he did, because 2 years before, this is what Jesus said. He said, have I not chosen you, the 12? Yet one of you is a devil. So why did Jesus do that? Why, you know, was he setting him up? Was he setting up Judas to fail? I don't think so. I think he was giving Judas an opportunity to pass. God will test you. He doesn't tempt you. It says so and talks about it in the book of James, talks about in 1 Corinthians. He actually says in 1 Corinthians, no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. God believes in you. He will give you tests in your finances, but it's not a test for you to fail. It's so that you can succeed. He's setting you up to pass the test. God doesn't tempt, but he does test. How many of you know what this is? Okay, if you grew up in church in the 90s or less, you probably recognize this. And if not, you might not know what it is. But this is a money plate, an offering plate. Okay, so what we used to do, this is back in the days before online giving was a thing. Okay, we used to have our offering time, our giving time, and we'd have ushers, and they would have these fancy, shiny plates and real silver. It's not actually, it's just like painted tin or something. But they would pass down, and then you would, you know, every person, you would pass it down. And we were all like silently and quietly judging each other. You know, you're kind of like sitting there, but you're like, did they put money in? You know, was it a check or was it cash? You know, occasionally they put like a ball of cash, like a roll of cash. You're like, I think it was ones or 20s. So we're passing the offering plate, you know, and it was just a different way of living during that time. Now, let me ask you this. If we were to pass this plate around, okay, we're putting an offering in. I'm pretty confident. I am very trusting that none of you would reach in and grab money and take it out. I don't think any of you would do that. Now, if you have money in your account that belongs to God and you're keeping it there instead of giving it to God, is that really any different? Just going to let that sit there for just a sec. But when it comes to offering, there was actually a man, Rick Purcell, true story. He was a brand new believer. He didn't have much He didn't have any like church background. So everything was like new to him. And so he was at church and the offering plate was being passed around and he wanted to give $30, but he only had 50. So he made change in the offering plate. Offering plate went by, pulled out a 50, put it in there, took some money back. You can imagine the looks that people were probably giving him. Like, what is this? What is this guy doing? He didn't know any different. You know, he just thought like the money's there. This is convenient. Make change. There was this time I was in college. I was going to go on a mission internship with one of my professors. He was from Sierra Leone in Africa, and he also pastored an African church in North Minneapolis. And so he said, I think you should start coming here so you can kind of get to know some of like the cultural norms that maybe you haven't been exposed to. And he's like, I think it'll help you for then when we get to Africa. And so their offering time at this church was a little bit different. Okay, there was a table up front with an offering bucket. Everybody would stand up, worship team would start going. They had like congas and bongos and any other kind of form of hand drum. You know, so the drums are going and everybody would stand up and everybody would dance down the aisle. So everyone would go, you know, it's kind of this cool thing. Everyone's dancing, put their money in the bucket, then they go back around and get to their seats. And so we do that. The pastor comes up, looks in the bucket, looks at all of us, looks in the bucket again. And he goes, again, and everybody stands up and everyone's kind of like rolling their eyes and, you know, now everyone's like dancing again, going down the aisle, pulling out their wallets, putting more money in. And I'm like, oh, that would be fun to try, just to try one, just to see people's faces. But it was very, very different. The extravagance of generosity. God is a generous God. He gave an extravagant gift, his son. He gave us a perfect world. He gifted Adam and Eve to each other. He extravagantly blesses us all the time. Like if you think that you don't have things to be grateful for, you're just not looking hard enough. Like when I pray with my kids, when I go to bed, most of it is I'm just looking at stuff around the room and just thanking God for it. Like I'm putting Phoenix to bed. I'm like, thank you, God, that we have a house. Thank you that Phoenix has a bed. Thank you that she has a frozen comforter and frozen pajamas and a frozen water bottle and a frozen doll. Like everything's frozen. And like I'm just picking out random stuff because I'm trying to instill in my kids how many things we have around us that we should be grateful for and thankful for. There's examples of extravagant gifts in the Bible. Okay, King David, he gave the equivalent of $21 billion for the building of the temple. $21 billion. And then there was this lady, the exact opposite. She had two mites, basically 2 cents. And she gave it all. It was everything that she had. Very small amount, but it was everything that she had. There was actually this Richfield couple offering time. They gave $2 in an offering, and it was all that they had. Literally kind of a modern-day example of the widow's mite. It was everything. And isn't it funny that human nature will tell you to hold on to that $2, knowing that $2 isn't nearly enough to cover your costs or your need anyways, instead of just giving it to God and saying, God, I'm trusting in you to provide for me? Like, unclench your fist. Like, allow God to not only give you what you need, but also what you want as well. By the way, they never missed a bill. So Mary's gift, Mary gave this gift. It was worth 300 denarii. Denarii was worth a day's wage. 300 denarii was a year's wage. So to give that in one lump sum, would that be extravagant? Of course. Would it be extravagant to pour out all that money's worth of perfume on someone's feet? Because that's what she did. Some would even think that's wasteful. That's probably what Judas was thinking. Jesus said, she did this for my burial. Jesus is like, she doesn't even understand that right now what she's doing is this symbolic thing, that she's actually foreshadowing my death. Because in fact, it was the only anointing before burial that Jesus would receive. It was too late to anoint his body later on, and when they had put him in the tomb, so they actually came back. That's what the Bible says. They had come back with 100 pounds of spices to do it on that Sunday morning after he was dead. But Jesus was already gone. They came by early, but he was an early riser. It was like one of those slow ones. Greg got it right away. And then like just like a slow trickle of laughs kind of like went through. There's three levels of giving. Tithes, offerings, extravagant offerings. Every gift in the Bible falls into one of these three categories. Someone asked a pastor once if he knew what the three categories of giving were. He said, yes. Person said, okay, what are they? He said, they're tithes, they're offerings, and there's painful offerings. Tithe is undesignated giving. People, human nature is we like to control how our money is used. And so some people like to use their giving as a form of manipulation or influence. But our tithe, it doesn't belong to us. God says, bring it to the storehouse. So once you've brought it, you've now fulfilled your responsibility. And tithing doesn't make you generous, simply obedient. There's a difference. 5 to 9% of Christians actually tithe. Give 10% of their income away. So 91 to 95% of believers never get past that first level. Once you get past that first level, you will get to the second and third level because the first level actually breaks the curse. It actually makes the 90% blessed. And God asks all of us at some point in our lives to give an extravagant offering. And it looks different for us, looks different for different people. Amy and I have been on both ends of that. We've been on the giving end. We've been on the receiving end. Someone gave us a car 2 years ago, and an amazing, extravagant gift. And for Amy and I, we're just on the other side now of an uncomfortable test of giving. For those of you that don't know, Amy and I, we adopted a sibling pair in November, and so our life has looked a lot different. And Amy and I are both very frugal, and hopefully I actually mean frugal and not cheap. So in the months leading up to the adoption, we were just trying to cut whatever cost we could, you know, not that we eat out a lot. We're like, let's stop eating out. Let's stop buying any coffee, you know, get rid of that Netflix subscription, you know, just trying to cut back in any way we could so we could have more money and resources for when these new kids got placed, in our home. And God had a different idea. For the 4 months prior to adopting and for the 2 months after, God had us empty out our entire checking account. I mean, virtually nothing left. It wasn't one big gift. It was actually 6 medium ones, all similar size. The first two weren't too difficult. It was kind of like, all right, you know, and it wasn't too bad. And they went. The next two were brutal. The next two were brutal because at this point, you know, it's like that security's gone. That emergency fund's gone. All the stuff that we wanted to do with that money, that's gone. The last two were really tough, but not as hard. Because again, at that point, I'm like, we don't have enough for an emergency fund anyways. We don't have enough to go on vacation. So like, well, let's go for broke. What does it matter? And so those last two we gave. And I still remember the moment. I had my phone out. Okay, I had my Citizens Bank app up. And I was looking at the impending charges with the impending deposits. And I was looking, I was trying to do the mental math. And I was wondering if the money coming in doesn't offset the money going out, I really don't know what we're going to do. And I hadn't felt that way in a long, long time. Because again, Amy and I have always lived below our means. And I would like to say that I was fully obedient. And really, I was only half obedient. I gave, okay, Amy and I gave each time God asked us to, all 6 times, but I didn't give in the way that God wanted me to. 2 Corinthians 9 says, each of you should give what you have declared in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And I didn't do it with a great attitude. During that 6 months, there was a lot of conversations or prayers. I think you could also define them as just complaints. Of me being like, come on, God. Like, Amy and I, we have always, ever since we've known each other, we've never worked less than 50 hours a week. We've always worked hard. We've always tithed. We've always given, you know. And the one thing that Amy and I love to do is we love to travel. Like, we love to go to different countries, experience other cultures, experience other food, and, you know, and just have that adventure. And now it was like God was taking this away, you know, and that's really what I was stuck on. I was stuck on vacation. Okay? And that's what was making it so difficult. And then Phoenix made it way worse. Okay? 2 years ago, we had done a family vacation. First time we had brought the kids somewhere. And first time we had done a vacation with Amy's family. We went to the Dominican Republic and it was great. We were on the beach all the time, like super memorable. And so now it's, you know, December. I've been having these conversations with God. And Phoenix comes up to me, you know, just those big eyes. And, you know, she's either like very sweet or very bossy, but she was very sweet in this moment. And she goes, Dad, I really want you to bring me to Ninikin. She can't say Dominican, so she says Ninikin. And I was like, baby, I can't bring you. Like, we don't have the money. Like, literally, the money's not there. And I was like, you're going to have to pray and ask God that, you know, he would make the money and the means exist. And it was a cool opportunity because her and I were able to pray about it, not once, but several times, you know, about this. But it was this challenging 6 months. The cool thing is, in January and February, God replaced in 2 months what we had given away in 6 months. Now, in the moment, I didn't know that. That's what made it so hard. God didn't say, give this away and I'll replenish it. He didn't say that. So that's why it was so difficult. And because he doesn't always give you that promise, because that's not the intent. The intent isn't give so that you can get. And so we had that test, and that test is complete. And God did bless us on the other end, even though he didn't need to. And that wasn't the intent of it. And now we find ourselves in another test right after. So with the whole adoption thing, in many ways, we feel like we've got two sets of siblings. We've got our biological siblings. We've got our adopted ones. And we really need to integrate them. We need to get to the point where we are healthy as a family, and we're moving that way. But so Amy's going to be quitting her job. And so she's going to be at home with all four kids, knowing that this is just the right move for us to make. That means that our income drops by 55%. Now, here's an interesting thing. There was a couple at Farmington. They were praying over their finances, I think in January. And God gave them a word for Amy and I. And that word was that Amy and I were going to have a blessed year financially. Now, I'm telling you this, the math doesn't make sense. So we're cutting our income by 55%, but God said that we're going to have a blessed year financially. This math doesn't make sense. This logic doesn't make sense, but I'm not putting my faith and trust in this. I'm putting it in this other thing. Because again, God also replaced in a few months what we'd given away in 6 months. Like, money is not a thing to God, okay? It's not like this thing where it's a limited amount and he doesn't have enough. And so he's trying to, you know, just dole out, you know, like a little bit to each person, or, okay, you've been really good, so I'll give you a little bit more. It's not that. Like, he wants your heart. So as long as he has your heart, what reason does he have to withhold from you money, vacation, a nice house, a nice car, all of the things that not only you need, but also the things that you want? He wants your heart. Now, I'm not asking you to give everything away. I'm asking you to give everything away that God is telling you to give. And God will give you an opportunity to give an extravagant gift. And it'll be the most amazing thing you ever do. It'll be exciting. It'll be scary. And it's this thing that will bring your trust in God to a whole new level. So what was the difference between Judas and Mary? Why was Judas so upset? He was a thief. He stole from God. He didn't like that he couldn't get hands on that money, that 300 denarii's worth. He wanted control over that. Mary, why did she give such an extravagant gift? 2 months before, her brother Lazarus had died, and Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Would you be grateful? Generosity comes from gratitude. Grateful people are generous. If you're not generous, it's likely that you're not grateful either, because those things are tied to each other. Ephesians 2:1 says, as for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins. All of us who are saved in Christ have been raised from dead. In the same way that Mary was grateful that Lazarus had been raised back up, in the same way, we've been raised back up from what we actually deserved. Mary did not give to be rewarded. Her motivation was out of gratitude. Her motivation was out of love for Jesus. It compelled her. God rewarded her. God always rewards the heart of gratitude. Generosity is when you give and you don't expect anything in return. Okay, if you're giving a Christmas gift, but the expectation is that you get a gift back, that's not a heart of gratitude or a generous heart. That's simply an exchange that's happening back and forth. Selfishness is when you give and you think that God owes you something. We give to God thinking like he's this gracious, you know, slot machine in the sky. We treat him like he's the stock market or genie in the sky. God's not going to bless a give-to-get attitude because it only feeds into a greedy heart. Some would say, I tried it. It didn't work. I gave money to see if God would return money back to me multiplied, and it didn't work. your problem was your attitude. You wanted to use God to help your financial position. Greed was the motivation for your gift. And so selfishness has this thing, it'll always put you at the center of decisions, whereas generosity puts God in the center of your decisions. Will you stand? There is a reward for generosity. Proverbs 11 says this, "One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes, others will be refreshed." I want you to close your eyes for just a sec. When we do this, there's no spiritual significance to closing your eyes. It's literally just so you're not distracted and you can focus on God. I want you to ask God this question. And I want you to ask it honestly with full sincerity, because you might not like the answer that you get. But we as people of Christ need to want and desire the truth, even if it's uncomfortable. So I want you to ask this question right now. Say, God, am I generous?